The "it's not broken enough" mentality of for-profit companies.
What do you mean?
Marcus asked. It means he's a snob, Carrie grumbled. A nerd purist. I licked the sugar off the rim of my lemon drop, glancing between the three of them.
It means, in corporate America,
Matt's gaze darted to my mouth, then away, then to his friend.
There is no benefit to solving a problem or finding the best solution to a problem. There's only benefit, monetary benefit, in making a problem less irritating or less pressing. This is because if a company actually solves a problem or solves it with the best solution, the company will ultimately lose money.
Give us an example, I asked, taking another sip of my drink.
I can give you hundreds. Take dating websites, for example. Every time they successfully pair a couple, they've lost two customers. Therefore, it's in their best interest to find the sweet spot of maximizing profit by not pairing too many couples successfully too quickly and being just slightly better than their competitors. Dr. Merrick and I theorize, though we cannot prove it because we haven't been given access to this data set, that these dating websites are using the same psychology that's used by casinos to keep people coming back. Meaning, they match people, even if they're not actually a match, with random actual matches thrown in so customers have some good experiences, but not too many to actually pair someone.
It's like that experiment with those pigeons and the button, where pressing the button would randomly give the pigeons food. I made the comparison to Skinner's famous experiment in the 1960s, noting that my words were starting to slur.
Yes, exactly. Casinos use that psychology with great success, as do most other for-profit companies if they're smart. Facebook's algorithms don't show you what you want to see. They don't show you what you've explicitly told them you want to see. They show you what will keep you on their site for the longest period of time, so they can display as many ads as possible. For every one post you're interested in, you're shown 30 shitty updates. We're all the pigeon, scrolling through our newsfeed for a random nugget of food.
Ugh, that's depressing. You're depressing, boo. Carrie sent me a big grin.
Did you just boo, Matt?
Yes, I did, she giggled. Matt's gaze warmed as it moved over me and he bit his bottom lip briefly before continuing.
It makes us good customers and suspicious of solutions that actually work. Think about it. Drug companies make billions selling products that manage symptoms. But how many actual cures or preventative agents come from Big Pharma? Whereas, how many cures or preventative agents have come from government-funded research or through nonprofit patient advocacy groups?
The March of Dimes funded the polio vaccine research, right? Marcus asked.
That's right, I confirmed. I've been researching the origins of vaccines for a series I'm working on.
So this is why Matt left his cushy corner office in sunny Palo Alto for his cramped office in windy Chicago. Marcus grinned at his friend. And cheerfully pays the do-gooder tax, Carrie added, tossing back the last of her margarita with a flourish. Matt smiled at his ex, rolling his eyes at her good-naturedly.
We all pay eventually. I prefer to pay now with cash rather than my soul later.
Ouch! She gripped her chest, mock wincing. Be careful, Matt. You might force me to leave and cry on my big pile of money.
So you're not taking the job offer with Gamble?
I asked, before I thought too carefully about the question. Matt's gaze cut to mine. Surprise flashed behind his eyes and he frowned.
Who told you about the job offer?
He sounded irritated. Fiona did?
When?
He demanded, his eyes somehow both wide and narrowed.
3 weeks ago, I guess?
I shrugged, waving away the topic, because even with the numbing cushion of alcohol sustaining my spirits, I still felt a pang of hurt that he hadn't told me about it himself. His attention dropped to the table, and he looked like he was doing calculations in his head, or trying to solve a puzzle, or sifting through memories.
Let's go dancing. Carrie tapped the table with her fingertips.
Is that possible? Can we do that? Is there a place to go?
Yes, there's lots of places.
I pushed the remainder of my drink aside, deciding it was best if I cut myself off from the teat of liquid recklessness.
What do you like? Club music or what?
How about 80s? Do you know a place like that? She asked excitedly.
Yes, I do. I licked my lips of the residual sugar, deciding to take them to Club Outrageous, a club that switched themes every month. I remembered my friend telling me that the summer theme was the yuppie chic of the 80s.
Cool. Let me run to the restroom and we'll take our car. It's a limo, so there's room for all of us.
Carrie whispered as she stood. Do you need to go?
I shook my head. No, thank you.
Marcus stood.
I'll go with you.
My mind was still on the logistics of dancing as Carrie and Marcus departed. Quinn's company handled the security of Club Outrageous. All I'd need to do to gain entrance was drop Quinn's name. I glanced at Matt, again finding him watching me. Maybe it was all the sugar and vodka and good food flowing through my system, or maybe it was the dark, intent look in his eyes. Or maybe it was all the pent-up emotional, intellectual, and sexual frustration I'd been carrying around, hiding from him for weeks. Who can say what inspired my recklessness? All I knew was I wasn't feeling cautious as I leaned forward, slowly licked my lips, and found his foot under the table with mine. And then I slid the pointed toe of my shoe up the back of his calf. His eyes flared, his eyebrows hitching subtly with surprise.
"Do you like to dance?" I asked, sounding husky to my ears. If I'd been totally sober, I would have had a hard time keeping a straight face. But I wasn't. Inhibitions were lowered, and he was in a suit, and I was in a dress.
"I'd like to dance with you,"
he responded, lowering his hand between the table and catching my ankle, his hot palm cutting through the warm fog of inebriation. He'd touched me before, but this was different. This touch felt intentional in a new way, like the difference between a high five and a caress.
"Do you know how?" I teased, feeling breathless as his fingers lightly skimmed halfway up my calf. "Or will I have to show you?"
"I know how," he said easily with dark confidence. "But I'd also like you to show me."
Matt held my hand as we left the restaurant, both of us making a pit stop at the restrooms prior to leaving, which earned a reprimand from Carrie.
"We could have all gone together and saved time. It would have been more efficient," she said, earning her a quizzical smile from her husband, like he thought she was cute.
I gave the directions to the driver, although he indicated he knew where it was. Once in the limo, Matt and I sat next to each other, his arm resting along the back of the bench seat behind me. Carrie and Marcus sat across from us in a mirrored position, and we spoke of random topics. Movies, books, advances in AI technology, during the short drive. As I suspected, gaining entrance to Club Outrageous wasn't a problem. In fact, I recognized the bouncer as one of Quinn's security team, Stan Willis. He was a nice guy who'd done his best to provide unobtrusive security to Janie and all her friends during Janie's bachelorette party in Vegas. Things hadn't gone as planned, but that's a different story. However, the shenanigans in Vegas did mean Stan remembered me. As soon as he saw me, I smiled and he stiffened.
"Marie."
I saw his mouth form my name. He stood, stepping away from the other bouncer as I approached. "Hey, Stan." Waving, I gave him my biggest smile, seeing that the line to enter was wrapped around the block. "Do you think you can get us in?" I asked as soon as I was within earshot, a club mix of Funky Town booming from the building behind him.
Yeah, absolutely.
He backed up a few steps, opening the latch for the velvet ropes.
How many people you got?
4. I turned, planning on motioning my companions forward, but Matt was standing directly behind me.
Okay, I need wrists.
Stan's eyes moved over Matt, then he reached behind the podium, extracting 4 armbands.
And I'll radio the guys inside. Have them open up a VIP booth for you.
Hey, thanks.
No problem. Tell Mrs. Sullivan I say hi.
Matt stepped to the side, allowing Carrie to go after me, then Marcus, and then he extended his own wrist, and we were good to go.
I still felt a little hazy from my 4 lemon drops, and also from the way Matt continued to either hold my hand or pull me close to his side, so I didn't take much note of our surroundings. To me, it looked like any other high-end dance club with flashing lights, loud music, and a lot of bodies. But Carrie and Marcus seemed to be pleased, grinning and dancing their way over to the bar area. Matt and I followed, and I made a mental note to drink only water from this point forward. A server dressed in hot pink leggings and an off-the-shoulder sweater approached us just as we reached the bar.
"Are you Marie Harris, party of four?"
"That's right," I nodded.
"Okay, come with me."
She waved us forward and began walking toward an area blocked off from the rest of the club with another velvet rope. Beyond the rope was a half flight of stairs that led to a corridor, with doors on one side and a wall at the back of the club on the other. We walked past several doors until we reached the very last one.
"Here, this one is for you. Your party is the first to use this room as it was just finished being redecorated this week. And please accept the champagne on the house."
She smiled brightly and handed me a slip of paper.
"Here's your access code. You can enter directly from the dance floor, but you have to type in the code. If you want drinks, just press the red button on the side of the table. Enjoy!"
The server motioned for us to enter, and we dutifully did so, trading perplexed but pleased glances. Inside was a smallish room with dark velvet, thickly cushioned benches lining the walls. Tables were on either end of the benches, and another table was in the middle of the space. On top of the table was a champagne bucket, bottle, and 4 glasses. Just as she said, a red button was in the center of the table.
"This place is awesome!" Carrie turned to me abruptly once we drew even with the table.
I noticed another door on the wall facing out toward the dance floor. Both the wall and door appeared to be made of reflective glass or high-quality plexiglass, which allowed the room's inhabitants to look out over the dance floor, but which, I guessed, obscured the room from the partygoers outside of it. I glanced at the access code, then passed it to Matt, who read it and passed it to Marcus. Carrie was opening the champagne while checking out the lay of the club beyond the room. The music was muted, not nearly as loud as it had been in the main club, but Marcus found a switch on the wall that increased the volume or lowered it.
"It's dark in here," Carrie remarked, lifting her chin toward me. "Do you want some champagne?"
"No, I'm good. I think I might go find some water."
"Should I press the button?"
Matt asked, like the button was magic.
"Larg, must he be so cute? Must he?"
I realized my sobriety was returning faster than I'd expected, and with my sobriety came awareness of how close he was standing to me.
"No, it's fine. I'll go grab it from the bar." "Let me go,"
Matt offered, leading me to one of the velvet booths and encouraging me to sit. He bent and brushed a kiss on the corner of my mouth, holding my gaze as he stood and untangled our fingers.
"I'll be right back with waters for everyone."
Carrie deposited her champagne on the table.
"I'll go with you. I'm supposed to convince you to take that job."
"It's not going to happen."
Matt shook his head at her, opening the door for his ex, loud music from the club spilling into our little room. I didn't catch what she said as they left, but I thought it sounded like, "I don't expect to," or something like that. Once the door shut, the sound from beyond once again muted, leaving me alone with Marcus and the poured glasses of champagne. He was wandering around the room as though looking for more switches.
"Do you think there's a light switch?"
"I think there must be. Why? Is it too dark?" Some of my earlier unease was reemerging now that the alcohol was leaving my system. Had I really played footsie with Matt at the restaurant? And why did I feel mostly obstinately pleased about it, rather than concerned?
"Nah."
He turned from his search and reclined on the booth across from mine.
"Just curious. This couch is comfortable. I want one of these."
I examined him, thinking, he doesn't look like the kind of guy who's going to be happy with once-a-week missionary. Yeah, it was a weird thought. But it was also true. Marcus seemed laid back, but he was clearly smitten with his wife. And before I could stop myself, I said, "I can't believe how cool you are about Carrie and Matt spending time together." Marcus shrugged.
"Why wouldn't I be?"
"Aren't you concerned about residual feelings? They were married for a while, right?"
"6 years, I think. Maybe 7.
"Exactly.
The answer is no, I'm not worried. Not at all. They still care about each other. I know they do, but it's purely platonic. Like, way platonic. He's not hot for her, and I guarantee she's not hot for him.
How do you know? I agreed with him based on what I'd witnessed so far, but perversely, I wanted his perspective. Needed his perspective.
Dudes know.
That made me chuckle. Sorry, that's not going to cut it. Marcus inspected me as though debating whether or not I was trustworthy. Seemingly making his decision, he sat up on the couch and leaned forward, elbows on his knees.
Okay, so you didn't hear this from me. But Carrie told me during the last few years of their marriage, they didn't have sex. And before that, they only did the deed like once a month.
I blinked once, slowly. That's it? Matt had said they were indifferent to each other, and watching them over the course of the evening, I saw a mutual respect and admiration, but I hadn't seen any signs of longing. So I didn't know why I was pushing this issue now, other than maybe I was trying to understand Matt better, and here was a rare opportunity with someone who had access to the inside scoop.
Yeah, that's it.
No, I mean, that's why you think their feelings are platonic? Matt said they were both too busy. They never saw each other. Of course they weren't humping like rabbits. They didn't get a chance. Marcus was already shaking his head before I finished.
Her schedule isn't any different now than it was then, and we've been together going on 3 years. I see her every night. Sure, she might get home late or work most weekends, but if she's in town, I see her every day. And whenever we see each other, we're humping like rabbits.
I caught myself mid-eye roll, instead closing my eyes and sighing.
I'm telling you,
he continued, unprompted.
Neither of them wanted to do it with each other. Neither could relinquish control. The way she tells it, he's a boss in the bedroom, and so is she, which is fine by me. But it didn't work for them. It's no fun fucking a control freak if you're a control freak. What he needs is someone who'll lay back and enjoy the ride.
He finished with a suggestive grin, though it wasn't pointed at me. Clearly he was thinking of himself and his wife. Embarrassingly, my muscles had tightened when Marcus said he's a boss in the bedroom, and my mouth had grown inexplicably dry. I lifted my eyes and found Marcus giving me a speculative look. You two never... In comparison to Carrie's earlier questions about doing it doggy style, I considered Marcus's indirect question now relatively tame. Yet I still felt a measure of embarrassment when I shook my head. We're just friends. He looked not exactly surprised, more like I'd revealed something critical about myself.
Huh.
What?
You dig him, right?
Am I that obvious?
No, you're not, actually. He chuckled. That was a blind guess. Matt said you're the kindest person he's ever met, friendly with everyone. I can't get a read on you one way or the other.
He shook his head, then added under his breath,
but he is.
That had me sitting straighter in my seat.
Matt?
Is what?
Nah, I'm not selling him out.
Matt? Selling Matt out? Marcus pressed his lips together, crossing his arms and shaking his head. I was about to threaten him with a champagne bottle-related injury when I spotted Carrie walking up the stairs to the room, Matt trailing behind her. They both held 4 water bottles. Marcus stood to open the door, giving me a teasing look and shaking his head, mouthing, "I'm not telling." "Oh, man, we have to go dance. I demand we dance for the next 2 hours." Carrie dumped the bottles on the couch where Marcus had been sitting, then grabbed his hand and pulled him out of the room. Meanwhile, Matt strolled in after her, moved to the side as she tugged Marcus out, and then crossed to one of the tables next to the booth where I was sitting. He deposited 3 bottles on the table and uncapped the 4th, handing it to me. "Thank you," I stood, accepted it, and took several long gulps. Matt turned and pulled off his jacket, discarding it to the booth behind me. He then loosened his tie, which drew my attention. "Oh, that's the tie I got you." I glanced between him and it, shocked I hadn't noticed it before now. He nodded and laid it reverently on top of his jacket, undoing the top two buttons of his shirt.
You said to wear it when I needed good luck.
Nothing about his comment sounded offhanded, and my stomach fluttered accordingly. I took another drink from the bottle, eyeing him. Did you need luck tonight? I cursed the slight tremor in my voice. He nodded, shoving his hands in his pockets and considering me for a beat before admitting quietly,
I'm glad you came.
Me too. I agreed quickly, bringing the bottle back to my lips and scowling at it when no water emerged. I studied its contents, realizing it was empty, then laughed at myself. I guess I was thirsty. Matt's smile was small and his nod was subtle. Despite the mass of bodies clearly visible beyond the wall of glass, or perhaps because of them, their frenzied movement in comparison to the stillness between us, the moment felt loud with significance and tension. My anxiety returned, mostly because I didn't truly regret playing footsie with Matt. And therefore, since I didn't regret it, I felt anxious about what I might do next. Setting the empty bottle on the table, I turned and gazed at the huge dance floor. The lights had just dimmed beyond the glass, leaving our little room darker. Thoughts like, maybe you can have one night together. Where's the harm in that? Kept floating through my mind, seducing me with the fantasy and provocative flashes of images. My lungs had difficulty drawing in enough air.
Marie?
Matt asked from directly behind me, and I couldn't help but think this would be a great place to have hot sex. We should totally do that. A short intro on drums, followed by a solo saxophone playing a familiar memory, reverberated over the speakers. I recognized the song, but couldn't immediately place it, as I was too busy talking myself into making a move on him. Yes? My skin felt too tight, so when I felt Matt's fingers in my hair, pushing it to the side, I released a surprised, yet not surprised, breath. He bent to my ear, whispering,
"We have to dance to this. Come on."
"What?" I glanced over my shoulder and tracked him with my eyes as he came around me, grabbing my hand. Perplexed and disappointed, I let him lead me out the door, to the dance floor, where the music was much louder and George Michael had just begun crooning. Matt pulled me through the throng of bodies, then stopped near the center of the crowd. He encouraged my arms around his neck and placed his hands on my waist, pasting our bodies together. We swayed to the music, and I tilted my head back, watching with wonder as the nut began lip-syncing along with George Michael. Not only did he lip-sync, he lip-synced with feeling to Careless Whisper by Wham. I giggled at his theatrics and his face split with a giant grin. I'd forgotten how funny he was. I loved this about him. My heart squeezed. Spinning me out to one side, then twisting me toward him, my back connected with his front. His arms wrapped around my middle, his nose and lips nuzzling my neck and ear, his hips leading mine in an expert, sensual sway. And that's when I realized that Matt Simmons actually knew how to dance. Like, really knew how to dance. He had fantastic rhythm. His feet weren't guilty. And moves. He had impressively good moves. He was such a good dancer that he didn't even appear to be thinking about it, like it was second nature. His hands smoothed from my shoulders down my arms, his fingers threading with my hands and lifting them, encouraging me to face him again as he returned them to his neck, all the while still mouthing the words and moving his body as though it was an extension of the music, and therefore so was I. Damn. He was sexy. The first iteration of the chorus drew to a close, and the saxophone took over. Matt's smile slowly waned as we gazed at each other, his hands sliding deliberately from my sides to my lower back. His dark eyes dropped to my mouth, heated, His lips parted and he inclined his head just an inch closer. I could only stare at him, feeling both paralyzed and caught by the thrilling yet terrifying current of his intent. Terrifying because this was Matt. My crutch. My crush. My mountain of unrequited feelings. My friend who wasn't really my friend, who I had non-friendly thoughts about all the time. I thought of him, of cuddling with him, of how he felt beneath my fingers, behind me, his lips on my neck. He's going to kiss me. The flare of panic only serving to intensify the sensations thickening my blood, sending me headfirst into a spiral of confusion and desire. If I gave in to this, surrendered to this thing between us, it wouldn't be bravery. It would be recklessness.
Chapter 24. Iamos. A bio-inspired technology for music composition and synthetization of music, where computers do not mimic musicians, but develop their own style with no human intervention. Source, Malomics Media.
His lips brushed mine. Just a soft whisper. It felt like a test. It also felt like torture. He was torturing me. Unable to endure his gentleness, I lifted my chin and dug my nails into the back of his neck, fusing our mouths together with feeling. And that seemed to be all the encouragement he needed. Abruptly, everything about him turned fierce, with biting teeth and devouring tongue. His strong arms wrapped around my body as though to trap me, as he plundered my mouth in the most exquisite of all kisses. Holy crap. He was a great kisser. I was dizzy with how great this felt, how necessary. Or maybe it was the lack of air. I didn't know. All I knew was that we were just going to have to keep kissing for the rest of our lives. And that was that. And plunder was exactly the right word. He lifted his head, sucking on my lip, tasting me anew, groaning when I responded with enthusiasm, tightening his hold when I shifted against him, licking and stroking the inside of my mouth. The twisting ache in my abdomen became overwhelming. And yet, I wanted to be sure he was enjoying himself. I wanted to make sure he was feeling the same fireworks of arousal and wonder that were igniting in my chest. So I endeavored to give and give and give. And then the tempo changed. Both the music and the rhythm of his kiss. The bass picked up, strumming and thumping, long, savoring beats reverberating through my chest, steady and intoxicating. We were moving. Matt moved me backward, still kissing, his mouth on my neck, my jaw, biting and tasting and sucking my skin with impatience and hunger. His fingers dug into my shoulders and backside, his hold on the brink of painful. Likewise, I tried to mirror his movements, kissing his neck, wanting him to feel as desperately out of control as I did. He steered us while we consumed each other, expertly weaving through the crowd, which seemed to instinctively recognize that this was a crisis. At the stairs, he separated from me, and I moaned my discontent, reaching for him. But then he bent, hoisting me over his shoulder, and I gasped. He climbed the stairs and punched in the 4-digit code. Then I heard him curse.
"What the fuck is that code?"
3-4-5-7, I said, laughing with desire-induced hysteria, my arms wrapping around his waist to keep myself steady.
"Thank you,"
came his short reply, punching in the numbers again, and we were through the door. I didn't spare a thought for how obvious we were being. Not one single thought, because hormones. Instead, I began frantically pulling his shirt from his pants, and then he set me on the ground. I frantically undid the buckle of his belt. His hands were at the back of my dress, searching for the zipper while our mouths mated. "Damn it." He breathed against my lips just as I released his buckle, winning the getting the other person more naked race. Unbuttoning his pants, I shoved my hand down the front of his boxers. Marie, fuck. Hissing, Matt pushed himself into my palm, a reflexive movement. Momentarily paralyzed, his forehead met mine and I saw him struggle, battling for control. He felt so good, so right, so thick and hard and long and big and smooth and hot. The want in me clawed, demanding, obliterating caution, silencing what was left of reason. Yet the desire to please him was just as strong, if not stronger. I worried. Although I'd never felt so certain I would perish without satisfaction, I fretted that I wouldn't be able to provide what he needed in return. And so I rubbed my body against his, impetuously seeking friction and sensation and touch, hoping to communicate to him that I wanted to be an instrument of his satisfaction as well. But then in the next moment, he yanked my hand away, holding my wrists hostage at my sides and walked me backward, his mouth once again capturing mine for a starving kiss, like I was the answer. Like all his hunger would end if he'd just kiss me long enough. My calves hit the couch and the strength of his advancing momentum sent me forward, my bottom hitting the velvet sofa, jarring me. He followed, kneeling on the floor, placing my arms around his neck while in the next moment his fingers slid under my dress. His thumbs gliding along the interior of my thighs, he parted my legs, making me tremble. "Let me touch you," I begged, spreading myself wider for him as I moved to the edge of the couch. His fingertips inched higher. I gasped, the throbbing want built within me, becoming brutal and demanding. "I want to make you feel good."
"Lay back,"
he instructed, brushing his knuckles against my center, rubbing me teasingly through the lace of my panties. I shuddered, unable to comply. My nails were anchored to his shoulders. I whimpered, "Please, Matt, please. I need you to feel good, too." A tremor overtook him, followed by a desperate growl as he hooked his fingers into my underwear and tugged them down my legs. His movements were urgent, lacking finesse, but it was perfect. The sign I craved. His frenetic desire was perfect as it heightened mine.
"Take off your dress,"
he demanded, removing his outer shirt, leaving him in his white tee. I had to lean forward, clumsily reaching for, then finding the pull of my zipper under my arm. Once it was undone, his hands were there, pushing it over my head and tossing it to where his jacket and tie were, discarded ages ago. He pulled me forward by wrapping one strong arm around my waist, nipping and suckling my breasts through my bra. Laying me back on the couch atop his dress shirt, he tugged one strap of my bra down to my shoulder, exposing me, sliding his hand around to unhook it as his mouth both worshipped and tortured my body with decadent kisses and bites.
"Take this off."
He tugged at the loose bra. Matt's large hands squeezed and massaged and fondled while I pulled the offending garment down my arms, then lifted his t-shirt, needing the feel of him, wanting his skin flush against mine. He leaned back, evading me, his eyes blazing a trail over my bare skin as I instinctively covered myself. He pulled my arms away from my body, his unapologetic gaze moving from my breasts to my stomach, then lower, licking his lips. "Matt," I pleaded. His eyes lifted to mine abruptly, hooded and sharp as if gripped by a sudden thought, an acute obsession. He leaned forward, his hand moving between my legs, parting me, stroking me. I cried out at the contact I craved, rolling my hips, gripping his strong shoulders for purchase as he demanded on a growl,
"This will not be the only time."
I nodded, panting, feeling empty, needing more. I wanted to touch him, stroke him, and drive him mad like he was so expertly doing to me. And the worry persisted that maybe I couldn't. That somehow the pleasure I could give him would fall short of his expectations.
"Tell me how badly you want me inside you,"
he ordered, bending to bite my neck, then soothed the sting with his tongue, adding,
"How badly you want me to fuck you."
Whoa. All the air left my lungs in a whoosh at his unexpected sexy talk, my head lolling to the side, offering more of myself. I'd never been a dirty talker. Maybe I never had the confidence to do so, but something about it sounded so essential in that moment. So perfect. I needed the brazen harshness of his words. They calmed the voices of doubt in my head.
Do you want me, Marie? Because I want you. You're so wet. Is that for me?
I couldn't speak, so I nodded, a keening sound slipping past my lips. His fingers at my center were a gentle contradiction to the ravenous kisses he lavished on my breasts, then stomach, then hip, then lower.
Do you want my mouth on you? On your pussy? I can't wait to taste you.
God, yes. The affirmation of his words, of his want, they both soothed and excited me. I couldn't breathe. I could barely see, and my heart galloped between my ears. Every filthy word out of his mouth drove me mad with desire. Holy shit! Who was this guy? And who was I? I watched his progress, the sight of his head moving between my legs, kissing my inner thigh, skimming his lips along the sensitive skin until he parted me with his thumbs. My toes curled, then pointed, every muscle in my body tense. Usually I wanted to give head first to make sure my partner was feeling good, but as Matt licked me, groaning, his sounds effectively silenced my concerns about his arousal and renewed thoughts of perishing. I might die from pleasure. The flat of his tongue lapped leisurely, tasting, savoring. I moaned loudly. I couldn't help it. Convinced I was on the brink of madness, I ached. I hurt. The carnal sounds of his mouth commingling with my hedonistic sighs made me restless. I want you, I panted, my fingers in his hair, grabbing and pulling and pushing. He groaned, slipping two fingers inside me, stroking me in tempo with his tongue. Not this way, I implored, reaching for him, clawing at his shirt, determined to take it off this time. I wanted him face to face. I wanted his body moving against mine. I wanted his grunts and sighs, the tense and release of his muscles. Please, please, I was so close, so close. I panicked. I didn't want to be selfish, and coming now felt unfair to him. I wanted his pleasure. He lifted his mouth from me and placed a wet, suckling kiss on the inside of my thigh, trailing his tongue along the skin and breathing on my center.
Tell me what you want.
He was torturing me again. But damn, it hurts so good. I want you inside me. I reached for him. He evaded me, increasing the tempo of his finger.
I am inside you.
Please, Matt, please let me. I groaned, frustrated but wildly aroused by his wickedness.
You're amazing. So beautiful. Touch yourself.
His voice shook slightly as he positioned my hands, one kneading my breast, encouraging me to roll and pinch my nipple, the other replacing his fingers at my center. I moaned in protest as he moved to stand, so he leaned forward, whispered in my ear, hot breath and an exorbitant amount of masculine confidence scorching my skin.
Don't stop. Will you let me watch you touch your perfect body? You're so sexy.
Then he stood, with his eyes on me, and his encouraging words ringing in my ears. I didn't know how much longer I would last. I felt vulnerable, but oddly empowered by my vulnerability. Matt's gaze held mine as he pulled his wallet from his pocket, pulling his shirt from his torso, and then finally shoving down his pants and boxers. I bit back another moan at the sight of him, my sex clenching because every inch of him, from his long legs to his mad scientist hair to his seductive mahogany eyes, was perfect to me. Deftly, he removed a condom from his wallet and ripped it open, discarding the wrapper and rolling it down his hard length. Then he was on me again, but this time he removed my hands from my body without a word, encouraging me to stand and hold on to his shoulders. His mouth crashed down to mine, and he picked me up. My legs bracketed his waist as he turned, sitting on the couch with me straddling him. Instinctively, I rocked against him, needing the friction, needing the feel of him, and shuddered when I felt his erection nudge against my entrance. He hissed, grabbed my hips, and held me still. His teeth were clenched as he commanded, "Do you want to ride me? Would that make you feel good?" I nodded, moaning, shifting restlessly as I used him to stroke myself. Matt released his hold on my hips. With one swift movement, he positioned me over him and thrust upward, filling me. I gasped, my nails digging into his skin. He felt so good, so right, so necessary. I wanted this to last. I wanted the feel of him beneath me to last forever. But then he encouraged me to move, to ride him, splaying his hands on my body as he thrust upward with sinuous deliberateness. Oh, God.
Do you like that?
He nuzzled my breasts, loving them with soft bites and licks, watching them move and sway with hunger in his eyes as I rolled my hips in time with his. I liked it. I loved it. Yet I couldn't turn my mind off. I wanted to know if it was good for him, too. Matt, please.
I could spend all day between your legs.
His hands grew covetous, massaging, cupping my breasts, and tugging at my nipples. His words of praise sent spikes of white-hot heat to my core. I wanted it to last for him, but it was too late. I splintered with a fierce cry as he thrust into my body faster and faster as I came, making me bounce on his lap. I bowed toward him, holding on as I tensed and tightened and released and pulsed. My eyes were closed against the overwhelming reality of sensation, riding the wave of pure ecstasy until it became an abyss. But he was there, catching me before I could fall, wrapping me in his arms and holding me close. Matt laid me back on the cushion, his agile form still moving over mine, still moving inside me.
"You're so lovely," he said.
My eyelashes fluttered open, our eyes mating along with our bodies. And then he said,
"God, Marie, I'm so in love with you."
And I stiffened beneath him. My mouth fell open. I stared at him and his words, spoken so earnestly on an anguished exhale. Too many thoughts, too many feelings, too big, too much. A rush, a wave, a tsunami. The earth moved. At least for me it did. It shifted on its axis and left me feeling unsteady, dizzy, euphoric, terrified. Meanwhile, Matt also stiffened, his movements abruptly ceasing as he blinked, his eyes flaring with panic, clearly just realizing what he'd said. And what was just as clear? He'd never meant to say it.
"Fuck."
His wide stare moved over my face. I felt him tense, as though he was planning to withdraw, so I reached for him. I wrapped my legs around his back and held fast to his arms. "No, don't, please." I lifted my head, kissing his parted lips, smoothing my hands up his arms to knead his shoulders until I felt his body relax. He groaned into my mouth as I rolled my hips. Then he angled his chin away until his forehead met mine, separating our lips. His breathing was erratic, and though he once again moved within me, and my body lifted to meet his rhythm, I could tell he was still fighting the surge of panic. "You feel amazing," I said, honest in my mindlessness. The answering tremor in his body told me he liked my words. The tension at my core built once more. I pushed my fingers into his hair and he answered with an agonized growl. Suddenly his thrusts became harder, longer, less fluid, and I marveled as his control slipped, then snapped. A thrill of wonder twisted in my lower belly, spreading to my heart and tightening my throat with the motion as he came, chanting, "I love you."
Chapter 25. Smart Tissue Autonomous Robot, STAR. A robotic arm with an articulated suturing tool and a force sensor to detect the tension in the surgical thread during operation. The arm is equipped with cameras that create a three-dimensional image to guide the robot as it deploys the tool, and also a thermal imaging device to help distinguish between similar-looking tissues. The robotic arm is controlled by a computer program with a repertoire of stitches, knots, and maneuvers that permits the arm to plan and carry out a procedure known as anastomosis, which involves sewing together two parts of a bodily tube. Source: Children's National Health System. Matt collapsed on me, yet he still had the mindfulness to support himself on his elbows, depressing the cushion on either side of my face. But our bodies were pressed together. That was the crucial point. Meanwhile, I wrapped my arms around his shoulders and my legs around his narrow hips, encouraging him to give me more of his weight. His labored breathing at my neck sent sparks along my skin, reigniting the embers still so close to the surface. He loved me. He loves you. God, universe, if there's anyone out there, please don't let me fuck this up. It wasn't that I considered myself a fuck-up. It's just that I wanted this, him, us, so badly. I wanted him to be my person, because he felt so right. He didn't feel perfect, but that just made him even more right. I squeezed him tighter, not wanting the moment to end. I was equal parts thrilled and terrified by the possibility of what would happen next. "Marie," he whispered against my hair. "Yes." I closed my eyes, bracing.
"You're holding me too tight."
"Oh, sorry." I loosened my arms, having to use a mental crowbar in the process. Taking a deep breath, Matt lifted his head and immediately kissed my mouth, encouraging me to lift my torso so he could slide his arms beneath me. We kissed for a long time. We kissed for so long I became aware of our surroundings again. The dark room, the velvet couch, the still sparkling glasses of champagne, the glass wall overlooking the dance floor, and the sounds of Cyndi Lauper over the speakers, telling me that girls just want to have fun.
I must have been mad. Just a glass wall separated us from hundreds of people. A mere four-digit code separated us from Carrie and Marcus.
But I couldn't bring myself to care, because he was still kissing me. And he loved me, and everything about him felt like the perfect combination of heavenly and sinful. When he pulled away, his gaze lowered to my mouth, and the look in his eyes was decidedly smug. With impressively fluidness, he lifted himself and turned to the side. Immediately, I felt the loss of his body. I mourned it, even though my muscles, especially in my legs and hips, were beginning to cramp.
"Your lips are swollen,"
he said, discarding the condom, then turning to lay next to me on his side. Matt smoothed his palm from my thigh, over my hip, and to my chest. Pausing in its upward trajectory, he fondled my breast. His eyes watched his hand, and the possessiveness in his gaze felt more intoxicating than the four cocktails with dinner.
"That's why I stopped kissing you,"
he muttered. "What?"
"I stopped kissing you because your lips are swollen. They must hurt."
I breathed out an incredulous breath. "Who are you?" His eyes cut to mine.
"You know me."
"Do I? Because I have to be honest, I wasn't expecting that."
"What were you expecting?"
he asked carefully. "I don't know, but the dirty talk was a surprise," I admitted, tracing his collarbone with my finger, deciding I'd start with the dirty talk rather than jumping straight to,
You're in love with me? Since when? Tell me everything. Leave nothing out.
The side of his mouth hitched, again smugly, and his eyes returned to his hand on my breast.
You said yourself, I'm full of surprises.
Yes, you are.
You didn't seem to mind.
More smugness. I didn't. I don't. I approve. The words tumbled from my mouth because I couldn't say them fast enough. That made him smile, just briefly. Then he swallowed. I watched his profile as the smile melted away and the lines of his face grew stark. He seemed distant. Or rather, reluctantly present, but ready to leave. Enigmatic. Like he couldn't decide what to do next, and not knowing what to do next was a foreign state for him. I covered his hand on my breast with mine. Matt, I whispered.
Hmm?
He didn't look at me. His eyes were still perusing my body. It was as if he was trying to memorize the sight of me. I reached up with my free hand and cupped his jaw, tears stinging in my eyes as I admitted, I'm so in love with you. Matt's gaze darted back to mine and he blinked, breathing the word.
What?
I love you. I also blinked, because my eyes were overflowing with tears. I love you so, so much. Why are you crying, Marie? I didn't know. I honestly had no idea. Feelings? Hormones? Maybe a nearby but as of yet unseen onion?
You do?
He asked, sounding so entirely stunned I physically ached for him. From what I could see through the blurriness of my tears, Matt appeared to be overwhelmed by both thoughts and emotions. Eventually, he released a sudden breath and gathered me in his arms, burying his head in my neck. I huffed a laugh, returning his embrace, giving in to the euphoria of loving him and knowing he loved me in return. What that meant, what came next, would have to wait. I was having difficulty breathing. He was holding me too tight. But honestly, I didn't mind. We dressed. We left. We went back to my place. Matt did two things on the way. He texted Marcus and Carrie, letting them know we'd left and that they would have to find their own way around tomorrow. He kissed me. A lot. On my neck, face, shoulders, arms, hands, wrists, fingertips, and sometimes mouth. But he did so gently, like he was still concerned about my lips. We were kissing as we entered my apartment, as he reached for the light switch and turned it on, and as I reached for it immediately after and turned it off. Marie, I slid my hands under his shirt, whispering, "Let's make love in every room." He made a grunting noise. Actually, it was more of a groan grunt of helplessness.
Yes, we definitely will, multiple times. But first,
he caught my wrists and held them between us.
First, I want assurances.
Assurances?
Promises, or oaths. Vows will also do.
Though his words struck me as silly, his expression was stern. About what? I tried to twist out of his grip, to touch him. He wouldn't let me.
I need to know.
His breathing changed as he stared at me.
When? When did it happen?
Matt loosened his hold on my wrists, bringing my hands to his neck. I was beginning to suspect he liked it when I touched him there.
What did I do to make you love me?
I grinned, pressing a quick kiss to his mouth, loving that I could now do that whenever I wanted. You were yourself. His eyes told me he didn't understand.
Meaning?
No, that's it. I love you for being you.
He stood straighter. Then when did it happen? What triggered it?
Studying him. His furrowed brow, the displeased turn of his mouth, I felt perplexed. A prickle of concern tickled the back of my neck. Matt, love doesn't work that way.
It's not a binary system of on or off. It's not a zero or a one. I smoothed my hands to his shoulders, then arms, gripping them tightly should he try to abruptly move away. It can be sudden, or so I've heard, but the love I have for you, what I feel for you, wasn't triggered by any one thing. I love you. I paused, because he flinched a little at the words, I love you, making my heart rate tick up. So I repeated, I love you, because of who you are, because of the man I've come to know. I love you. He was shaking his head before I'd finished speaking.
How many people do you love, Marie?
I searched his eyes for a clue as to where he was going with this. I don't know. I've never counted.
Do you love Fiona?
Yes.
How about Quinn?
Yes. I was glaring at him now, my fingers having relaxed on his arms.
How many more?
What's your point?
I love one person, and she's standing in front of me.
This statement sounded accusatory, belligerent. Are you... I dropped my hand, stepping out of his grip. Are you saying my love is worth less because I love many people?
I'm saying you are exceptionally gifted at loving people, even when they're undeserving of it.
What? What? Okay, that made me mad. Wow. I backed away from him, feeling like I'd been slapped, like my lungs were suddenly on fire. Looking everywhere but at Matt, I tried to find the lid to my temper. It had suddenly blown off. Okay. Wow. Wow.
It's not an insult.
The fuck it's not? Placing my hands on my hips, I angled my chin and met his eyes. But you're not insulting me. You're insulting yourself. And if you wanted to make me angry, that was the fastest way to do it. He glared at me, his head turned slightly to one side like he was bracing for a blow.
You're too generous.
His voice was deep, quiet, just above a whisper. No, I'm not. You have self-worth issues. I punctuated the word you by pointing my finger at his heart. He swallowed, wincing, but said nothing, and I knew I was right. I was so right. I was the rightest I'd ever been about anything. And my rightness made me feel like screaming. It made me want to grab him and shake him until he understood how remarkable he was. How kind, good, clever, thoughtful, intelligent, sexy, wonderful, just everything. You jerk. I shook my head, pissed off beyond reason. You think you're not amazing, but you are. And sure, I could stand here and make a list of all the reasons I love you, of all the ways that you are special and awesome, so hilarious and witty and brilliant and... I cut myself off, shaking my head faster. Nope, I'm not going to do that, because if you don't believe these things about yourself, nothing I say is going to change your mind. I'm not going to force you to drink the water, Matt, even though you should drink the damn water. He swallowed with effort, like something was stuck in his throat. A long moment passed, my shouted words seeming to echo in the apartment between us. The silence wasn't deafening. It was remarkably quiet and still. Eventually, he cleared his throat.
I know I'm smart,
he said, like it was a concession, like he was willing to admit one positive thing about himself, but no more. My chin wobbled, and I had to hold my breath for several seconds to keep myself from crying. Staring at him, staring at his exceptional and expressive eyes, so stubbornly skeptical about his own value, I realized that loving someone who doesn't love himself was like being stabbed and having no way to stem the flow of blood. I was helpless in the face of his own indifference. Only he had the power, and my powerlessness increased my frustration. Stupid, fucking, dehydrated horse! He took a step toward me.
Marie,
do you think I'm stupid? I asked.
No, of course not. I don't think you're stupid.
He reached for me and I let him slide his hands around my waist. Do you think I have poor judgment?
He hesitated.
I opened my mouth, prepared to yell at him again.
You were going to let a stranger dry hump you.
I heaved an aggravated laugh. A man I'd carefully vetted with multiple sources and had spoken to over the phone several times and who'd been vouched for by more than one personal friend. Do you know there are dry humpers in Chicago? There are lots. I didn't feel willing to meet any of them. This guy was the only guy. The only guy.
Matt furrowed his brow.
I didn't have all that information.
So you don't trust my judgment?
I do trust your judgment.
Do you think I'm a liar?
No, I don't.
He answered right away. So when I tell you that you are amazing, that you are exceptional, do you believe me? He hesitated, and I saw a fierce debate war within him. Fine. Here's the thing. You need therapy. He lifted his chin. The sudden flash in his eyes told me he was about to argue. I rushed to add, you need to love yourself. Because if you can't love yourself, then I can't count on your love for me.
Wait a minute. No.
His tone was hard, edged with resentment, as though he resented that I was questioning his love for me.
You cannot possibly believe that I don't love you.
You said yourself that people need to be needed, and pride, the fear of rejection, makes the love offered meaningful. If you don't love yourself, if you don't see your own worth, then what are you risking by loving me? Matt snapped his mouth shut. My love! I paused and took a deep breath to calm down because I realized I was still yelling. Forcing composure into my voice, I started again. My love is worth a lot. A lot. Because I know I'm awesome. The side of his mouth hitched reluctantly, his eyes warming as they moved over my face.
True. You are.
I love you. I love you, Matt. I'm in love with you. I'm desperate for you. I think about you all the time. Did you know I have a crush on your chin? I love your chin. And your brain gives me lady boners. I've been walking around with a serious case of blue bean for months. He huffed a laugh, his eyes turning glassy as he again swallowed with effort. But I gathered his face between my hands, holding him with reverence, hoping he'd witness and accept the admiration and adoration in my eyes. I refuse to have you question your value. In doing so, you insult me. If you want to be with me, you're going to have to find a way to accept that you're not just worthy of great love, and you don't just deserve great love. I pressed a kiss to his mouth and then whispered against his lips. You must demand it. I didn't miss how he'd fisted his hands into the fabric of my dress as I spoke, or how his gaze grew agitated with anxiety, or how he leaned closer, hovering, anxious.
So,
he cleared his throat, visibly hesitating. I got the sense he was afraid to speak his next thought. Nothing you say is going to make me stop loving you.
What if I told you I was a Slytherin?
I would still love you.
What if I...
Matt, say it. Ask it. Speak. Trust me, but also trust yourself. Trust you're worth me fighting for. His eyes shone with emotion.
I want us to be together. I want to be with you all the time from now on.
Good. Me too. I couldn't have stopped my smile or my sudden happy tears even if I wanted to. I had to press my lips together again to fight the wobble of my chin.
What if I don't go to therapy?
He blurted, swallowing.
What if I don't want to? Will you?
He tugged me closer, using the fabric of my dress.
Do I have a choice?
Yes. Of course. It has to be your choice. If you don't want it, I can't force you.
But you could.
Matt's signature sincerity usually made my heart melt, but this time it broke my heart instead. His voice was thick, roughened with anguish and a hint of resentment.
If you told me I had to, in order for us to be together, I would.
I was shaking my head before he'd finished, whispering because I didn't trust my voice. Please don't do that to me. I lifted my chin to give him a kiss. Don't shift your responsibility to me. That's not fair, and that's not who you are. Matt studied me, his eyes moving between mine. Eventually, he nodded, releasing his fistfuls of my skirt and sliding his arms around me. As he pulled me to him and we embraced, I felt the tension drain from his body.
Thank you, he said, the words muffled as his mouth was pressed to my shoulder.
For what? I smoothed my hand up and down his back, needing this, needing to hold him, loving that I could.
For being you.
He placed a kiss on my neck, adding roughly,
for loving me.
Chapter 26. Falcon Heavy and the Dragon Space Capsule. The rocket and the capsule, respectively, that will be used to take the first two space tourists around the moon. Projected launch, 2018. Source, SpaceX. We didn't make love in every room on Friday night. Instead, we stripped naked and cuddled in my bed. I had so many questions. I wanted to know everything. What he'd been thinking over the last few months and when he'd realized he loved me. But we didn't talk. We held each other, with touches meant to comfort rather than arouse. However, on Saturday, we made love in every room. All day. I didn't have many surfaces in my apartment, so each was christened a few times by Sunday morning and with wild, abandoned enthusiasm, which left me speechless. I hadn't expected him to be so talented at making me come every single time. Marcus had been right. Matt was a boss in the bedroom. He was precise and verged on domineering, frequently making me wait until I begged for relief. But his bossiness was an aphrodisiac, as was his dirty talk. Both demolished my brain's predisposition to worry. He told me how much I pleased him, and since he demanded control, I happily surrendered to his enthusiasm for worshipping my body. But again, we didn't talk, not about anything substantive. And that was fine with me because we used the time to settle into the idea of us as an us. It felt necessary, and I got the sense we were both protective of the newness, of the wonder of finally having admitted the truth to each other. Early Monday morning, when he left me, Matt pledged to contact me in the afternoon about dinner and plans for the rest of the week. We hadn't touched on the topic of therapy again after our talk on Friday, so I was surprised to receive a text mid-afternoon Monday. Matt.
I have an appointment this Wednesday with Thomas. Sandra recommended him.
I knew of Thomas. Sandra claimed he was a gifted adult psychotherapist and had spoken very highly of him many times. She even had the image of his face on two of her custom-printed T-shirts. Don't ask. I frowned at Matt's message for several minutes, sorting through my feelings on this announcement. The surprise, then happiness, then apprehension, before messaging him back. Marie, I hope you're doing this for yourself.
Matt, I am doing this for myself, because myself wants to have more sex with you.
Despite the faulty reasoning of his text, I laughed. As I was typing to tell him he needed to reevaluate his priorities, he texted again.
Matt, and I'm doing this because I suspect you are as wise as you are beautiful.
Matt,
I want to deserve you.
My heart twisted and I pressed the phone to my chest, sighing. I could almost see him, the heartfelt intensity in his eyes. Marie, you do deserve me, and I will keep reminding you until you believe me.
Matt, I look forward to being reminded. Matt, dinner tonight? Matt, I'll cook.
After I recovered from my shock, I quickly typed, Marie, Matt? Cook? Does not compute.
Matt, I anticipate conducting a system-wide diagnostic on you tonight, AF-709.
AF-709? That sent me to Wikipedia, which had me looking at a picture of Julie Newmar playing the role of AF-709, Rhoda the Robot, a very, very sexy life-sized android in the short-lived TV show My Living Doll. Ah, the 1960s. So astonishingly sexist. And yet overflowing with splendid role-playing ideas.
Is this a joke?
No.
Marie?
Matt shook his head, his mouth moving with no sound emerging, his expression one of extreme confusion and disbelief.
You friend-zoned me.
He said friend-zoned like I'd reported him to the IRS for a tax audit. Matt, come on. I shook my head, rolling my eyes before taking a sip of my wine. I invited you over here to cuddle. On my bed. It was Monday night. Matt was standing in my kitchen, chopping vegetables for homemade tomato sauce. He claimed he only knew how to make three dinners. Lasagna, meatloaf, and grilled anything. I was sitting at the countertop, enjoying the view, and had finally broached the topic of why it had taken him so long to make a move.
What was I supposed to do? Force my lascivious attentions upon you? Send dick pics? Hope the sight of my cock would bring you to your senses?
With each question, his irritation eased into good-natured teasing.
And as data collection for future seducing efforts, will that work?
I had to take a deep breath before responding, because Matt said the word cock so easily. He didn't say it often. In fact, this was the first time he'd said it, outside of sexy times, but I hadn't yet grown accustomed to it coming out of his mouth. I hadn't grown accustomed to his dirty talk during sex either. Though I hadn't yet told him how much I enjoyed his skill in this area, I got the impression he knew anyway.
How much more obvious should I have been? I challenged.
No, no, no. There is no obvious. Not after a friend zone maneuver. A friend zone maneuver is the end of a book, not the end of a chapter. It's the nuclear weapon of maneuvers. Short of flat out telling me you wanted to change the nature of things between us or stripping naked and ordering me to pleasure you, I wasn't ever going to catch on to any hints.
You seriously had no idea. How is that possible?
Friend zone. Friend zone. Otherwise known as the scoreless end zone.
I only did that because you said you weren't interested in long-term relationships. He gave me another look of incredulity.
What?
You said you were finished with long-term relationships. You said you'd read that book, blah, blah, blah. In fact, when I asked you if you ever wanted to get married again, you said, hell no.
That's the reason? That's why you friend-zoned me?
Yes. I even told you that. If you recall, that night I saw you at Sandra and Alex's and you walked me to the hospital so I could visit Quinn. He blinked at me.
I thought that was just an excuse.
What? Why?
Because you weren't that into me. I thought you were lying to spare my feelings.
I choked on air. Is that a joke?
No, not a joke.
His attention moved back to the mushrooms he was chopping, and he laughed.
Matt, you said you didn't want anything long-term with anyone.
We're now stuck in a recursive loop. I am the chicken, you are the egg.
He scooped up the mushrooms and added them to the big stock pot, stirring a few times with a wooden spoon, then replacing the lid, letting the contents simmer. I huffed, feeling enormously frustrated by my inadvertent, though well-meaning, self-sabotage. Do you mean to tell me you've been open to a relationship with me all this time? He hesitated, coming around the corner and standing next to me, stealing a sip of my